Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Menu Live. My name is Jeff Bishop, and we'll have Daryl Shandro and our guests coming up here in just a couple of minutes. We want to give you a little bit of housekeeping information. I wanted to give you a little bit of information about the last hour presentation of Main Menu. If you download the podcast feed, you'll get the complete episode there of Earl Harrison's presentation, although there was only about 30, 45 seconds left of that. It faded out on us due to length because of the spots that run at the beginning of the hour. So if you download the podcast feed, you should be all set. Now, speaking of podcast feeds, we've been asked to repeat this at the beginning as well as at the end, and we'll definitely try to do that tonight. If you would like to download the podcasts for Main Menu and Main Menu Live, they can be found by going to http://www.acbradio.org/podcasts and then either /main menu or /main menu live. Now, sometimes during the show, we will have a situation where the show is entirely all Main Menu Live, and we will not include a Main Menu feed for that week. We received a couple of emails this week concerning the July 6th and July 13th, actually the July 13th and July 20th programs. And in those specific cases, those were live programs the entire 2 hours. So you would only have seen the podcasts appear on the Main Menu Live feed. We actually were putting them up in both, and then we got complaints that people were downloading the same files. So there you go. So that just gives you a little bit of information. If you would like to participate during the show tonight, the number to call into the show is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And the MSN address to use is mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. And you can either ask your questions that way, or you can just call into the show and ask your questions too. We don't have the phone lines open quite yet, so keep your dialing finger ready, and we'll let you know when those phone lines are open. We're first going to hear from Jamie Pauls, who has been with us since Main Menu Live has started, and we really sincerely appreciate him coming on and each week providing us a review of some type. But this week, he kind of just wraps up the Main Menu season. That's right, folks. We're going to be taking a little bit of a break for the next 5 weeks or so. We're going to be off, and we'll be replaying some of your favorite Main Menu presentations during that time. But so let's hear from Jamie Pauls, and then we'll bring on Daryl Shandro, Don Barrett, and Karen McCall. We were going to be having Chris Hofstetter. Unfortunately, he was not able to join us this evening. But without further ado, let's go ahead and hear from Jamie, and then we'll bring on our panel.
Friends, this is Jamie Pauls. If you were paying close attention to my AccessWatch software review last week, you'll notice that I wished you a happy summer. That's because I thought last week was the last broadcast of the season. In fact, this week is. I don't have a software review for you this week, but I did want to take just a moment to let you know that I've updated the AccessWatch homepage. You'll find several new links of interest. That brings me to my last thought. If you have some links that you would like for me to add to AccessWatch, please drop me a line, Jamie Pauls, that's JamiePauls, @gmail.com, and let me know what you'd like to see on AccessWatch. Come check out AccessWatch at www.accesswatch.info. And don't forget to check out our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. Until the new Main Menu season starts, have a great summer.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday, To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Thank you, Steve, very much for that. We appreciate that. And we'll let everyone know when we're going to be opening up the phone lines. Actually, Daryl will let all of you know that, as he's going to be pretty much running the show tonight. I'm going to be answering the phones and taking your MSN questions. So let's get started, everybody. Let's bring in the crew. Hello, Daryl.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me on, as always, and letting me sort of try to take the reins.
Yes, it should be a lot of fun. And do we have everybody?
We have Don and we have Karen. And Don is kind of listening to us on the stream side of the house because he's having a little bit of trouble hearing us.
Oh, okay. All right. So just had to take
I gave him the other path.
Okay, so. Fine. All right, great. Yeah. And so we'll just have to make sure that we take that into account when he wants to provide feedback. All right. Well, we'll let you take it away and let me know when you want the phone lines opened up, Daryl, and we'll make that happen. All right?
By the way, I don't see you on MSN.
I should be on the main menu address.
Gotcha. I'll double check. All right. So I thought we would have this topic of efficiency and productivity with respect to using assistive technology. And this sort of came out of some stories that Chris Hofstadter posted on his blog and some conversations that I've had with my friend Karen McCall. And she has been, we have been chatting about the fact that most people, most sighted people anyhow, for the most part seem to believe that, you know, we just listen to whatever our computer tells us. And so if we open a document or we open a web page, surely we just listen to the whole page, right? Wrong! How useful would that be, right? So anyway, Karen and I started chatting about different techniques of what it is that we do when we come to a document or a web page or something where we need to access information. I thought maybe you would just talk with us about that for a few minutes and about your background doing accessibility-related books and seminars and workshops.
Yeah, and good evening from just outside of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where it's almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit with the humidity. My background is in education. I also use the adaptive technology. I am primarily a screen reader user. And there are two things that I come across. Either people think that I just sit and listen to entire documents, or if they hear a screen reader talking or any kind of sound coming out of the computer, they figure it's working okay. There's noise, so therefore, you know, you're absorbing content. And both things aren't necessarily true. I've discovered in doing both training for K-12 students as well as some of the workshops I've been doing that my mantra for the last couple of months has been, I don't have time to listen to the whole thing. I don't have time to read the whole form. You know, when I go to a form, the first thing I do is get a list of form fields. And if I can't figure out how to fill the form out from the form fields, I generally contact people and say, can you give me an accessible version of this? Because I don't have time to sit and read it. Odds are if the form fields aren't accessible, the text on the form isn't going to be accessible. It's the same with web content. In teaching students who are in grade 4 and 5, strategies for finding information on the internet, because they're expected to hand in assignments the same time everyone else does, giving them the basic keyboard commands that helps them find content. And from then, if they want to read the entire page, that's up to them. But in most cases, you really don't have time to sit and listen to an entire web page until you find something that you want. And it's one of the skills that I'm finding that as students move from the K-12 panel into college and university and then into employment, they really don't have the skills in terms of navigating documents and web pages to find the information that that they need at the time that they need it. And so it's one of the things that has cropped up recently in a big way.
Great. So Don, what is your take and what is your background on this topic of opening and reading documents and web pages? Do you find a similar scenario as Karen, where people assume, oh, hey, it's working, it's talking, so, and there's Braille on the Braille display, so it must be working, right?
I'm hoping you all hear me okay.
We hear you great.
Great. The whole idea of efficiency in reading documents is a fascinating subject, particularly for us, because it's become a real, almost a legal controversy. As you all know, Section 508 of the Rehab Act, which mandates that the federal government purchase accessible electronic and information technology, requires what's called comparable access. And the problem is, if you ask 10 different people, you'll get a different version of the definition of what comparable access is. I'll give you a real quick example. There are some agencies who, if you open a website and do a search on their page, if your focus isn't forced immediately to the search results, they won't pass that page. Another example is if you get on their web form and there's an error message, they want focus to go immediately to that error message instead of you starting at the top of the page, or they won't pass it as 508 compliant. And the point of all that is that efficiency is a real important part of access. And, you know, everybody has a different idea of how much efficiency really is involved. If it takes a sighted person 4 minutes to do something, well, is it okay if it takes us 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes? I mean, at what point do you say something is not accessible simply because it takes longer to read it?
Daryl, I had a question for Don in reference to this issue of error messages. Is that all right?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay. This whole issue of Ajax websites, you know, you and I, Don, have talked about this actually quite a bit. And how much of that is playing into this of, you know, them being so dynamic, the error messages could appear anywhere on the page, and not necessarily at the bottom. They could appear at the top. They could appear next to the field. They could appear virtually anywhere. And I was just wondering if that's come up in your work, especially, you know, working at the Department of Ed and 508 guidelines.
Yeah, that's becoming a bigger and bigger 508 issue. And the 508 Refresh team, which is looking at the whole issue of how to increase, you know, conformance and accessibility, is looking at new kinds of content like Ajax and Flash on the web page. And, you know, of course, they're recognizing the whole area that websites aren't just HTML anymore. They're combinations of all kinds of scripting and other software, and, you know, and it's just going to be more and more we're going to see that. And Ajax has created a lot of problems for us. We've seen sites that, as you know, update dynamically with no knowledge by the user, and we have a real problem passing them. Now, if the user causes an update, then it's a little bit easier to pass something like that. But if something other event that the user has no knowledge of causes an update, that causes a real 508 problem.
Yes.
It also causes a problem just for people in general, because you tend to want to find error messages or information in standard places on a website. You figure that the designer is going to decide, you know, this is where the error message is going to be. And by having error messages and information pop up randomly all over a page in different, I've seen different colors, I've seen one time they'll use an asterisk, the next time they'll use a word note with an underline, the next time it'll be in red. You really don't know what is important, what needs your attention, and without the whole addition of adaptive technology, it becomes very visually confusing as to what you need to pay attention to when I enter something in, where is the resulting information going to show up? If I've entered it wrong, is it going to show up in, is the error message going to show up in red? Is it going to be in blue? Is it going to be in the lower part? Is it going to be in the upper part? You really don't know where to look. And it just creates problems for everybody.
I'd like us to go ahead and start opening the lines. That would be great, because I would like very soon for some of you to share your techniques for efficiently accessing documents and websites. So Karen, this is definitely a low vision issue as well as a matter of screen reading, I take it.
Well, and yes, and for people with learning disabilities who may not be reacting as fast, may not be as cognizant of things popping up, all messages and information popping up all over a page, you really do tend to look for the standard. And when you find it, you sort of mentally say, okay, the web designer is going to do this. This is where I can find the information. And then all of a sudden the rules change on either on the same page or on another page. So it's not just something that affects people who use screen readers, but screen magnification too. I mean, you can imagine someone having their screen magnified and thinking that the error message are always going to be in the upper left or upper right, and all of a sudden you have something down near the bottom that says, you know, this is view only information. Well, that would have been nice to be up that's top, where I would have expected to see that rather than at the bottom of the page.
So, Don, do you have examples of these scenarios or of maybe websites that seems like they should be accessible but exhibit these concerns we're talking about?
We have a lot of internal applications that exhibit, you know, those that are built with lots of scripting that do, you know, various, you know, data massage for internal data that we may have in the department. Luckily, I haven't seen too much external stuff yet that causes those kind of problems. But I'm reminded of what someone we all know very well, Neil Ewers, once put it really well when he talked about using a screen reader on anything, whether it's a website or a Word document, is like looking at it through a soda straw. And no matter how fast you're listening, you are really hearing one word at a time. And I'm just fascinated by the number of hoops that screen reader companies have gone through to come up with ways of trying to, I guess, enlarging the straw, if you will, you know, using the header commands and the various access keys that both JAWS and WindowEyes are employing now to try to get you around the page as quickly as possible. And I find a lot of our customers are really, you know, they understand the concept of browsing the web, but they're really not as familiar with these quick keys that they need to be, because they just don't even know where to begin and how to access a page. I mean, it's so daunting. I think they're intimidated. It's kind of like a wrestling match, and if you don't grapple with it properly, it's going to pin you, and it's all going to be over, and you're not going to find what you need. I've gone to some shopping sites and other sites. I mean, Amazon's a great example. I'm always fighting with that site. And, you know, as you all know, it's a very daunting experience. And unless you're careful and patient and just very kind of tenacious about using all the screen reader commands that come to bear in your mind and all the tricks of the trade, you're not going to find what you're looking for. And there have been times when I've come across situations, particularly with Amazon as a great example, where I almost didn't make the purchase, or I purchased the wrong thing, or I couldn't, you know, you go to make a one-click order and they offer you 10 other things that you might want to buy along with it, and if you hit the wrong one click, you've bought the wrong thing. I mean, it's just a nightmare. So I think one of the things people really need to do is not only learn their browser, but learn all of those tricks that the screen reader companies are trying to introduce to bring comparable access into as close a reality as possible.
Well, that's a,
that's what a lot of my training is developing into, especially with boards of education here in Ontario, and helping students and teachers understand what all of those keyboard commands are so that the students don't spend an entire day on a website and end up frustrated.
Definitely. Everyone out there, you can call us now at 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-JEFF. And tell us, what are your tricks of the trade for accessing documents and websites? So, Karen, so one of the things that we talked about and inspired me to do this show was some of the tricks that you use when you come to a web page. So that might be a good segue into that. If you'd kind of give us some ideas as to some typical things that you do once you come to a website, especially one that may be either very complex or unfamiliar.
Daryl, we do have a phone call, actually.
All right.
Let's bring the caller in and say hello to Joe. Hello, Joe, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello. I'm glad to be on the show, and I have a two-part... I have been an SAA user slash whatever they're going to call their, and I've been working with their accessibility, and I've had some experience with JAWS. And the other day, the thought occurred to me is that if you have companies taking varying approaches, and you have trouble with a certain web page, the possibility exists that I could blame the vendor for the lack of accessibility, when maybe the company whose product I'm using took an approach that left something inaccessible because the approach of that they took fell short of that accessibility. And I'm wondering, as we get different people taking different approaches, and people want to solve these problems, do you agree with that possibility?
And Joe, ask your other part of your question, and we'll let you go. You can listen on the air.
The second thing with shopping sites or with internet navigation, one thing that I would like to be able to do, especially like if you're doing grocery shopping, is when you hit on the link to get the information on the product, when you come out of it, it would be nice to land as close to the link as possible, and oftentimes you don't, and you have to spend a lot of time navigating back to where you left off. So that's an area of improvement I'd like to see.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Go ahead, Daryl.
Okay, so, wow. Well, yeah, Joe, that's a pretty big can of worms, is it? Where does the responsibility of the assistive tech developer and the mainstream developer, where do those intersect, right? I mean, we could talk about that all night and really not get anywhere. What are your thoughts, Don?
I really apologize. I'm not quite sure. I couldn't hear the phone call at all, but I think I'm getting your question as being, where does the responsibility of the website developer leave off, and where does the responsibility of the assistive technology come into play?
Right. The question essentially was, so we have a number of different screen reader vendors with a number of different approaches and keyboard commands for accessing resources like websites, and his concern is, what if I blame the vendor for having accessibility issues with their website, when in fact there's another screen reader out there that makes that same site accessible?
Well, I think the whole issue of, that's why following standards is critical. To the extent that developers follow accessibility standards, the majority, if not all, screen readers will be able to have access to the site, if I'm getting the question correctly. And sorry, folks, I'm only hearing maybe one-tenth of what's being said. But anyway, I think all I'll say is this, and of course I'd love to hear what Karen has to say about it. Karen, you're a legend in this field, and I'm so thrilled to be on the same call with you. I wish I could hear a little bit better. But I think standards here are really key, because if we can get developers working and thinking about accessibility in the same way, that's going to open the door to at least making websites to some degree as useful as possible. And then, of course, the screen readers can come in with their little tricks and hopefully make up the difference, unless the developers have gone so far afield that things are just too inaccessible.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I talk about standards. In fact, on my accessible PDF resources webpage, I've actually put up a topic called "There is no such thing as being JAWS compliant when it comes to PDF," because this is something I start hearing. Oh, it's WindowEyes compliant. It's JAWS compliant. Well, that's the adaptive technology. It's not a validation tool. And, you know, what version of each of the products are you using? What are your settings? There are so many variables. If you're going to start relying on adaptive technology, if you rely on the standards, you also get a broader base. And we have to realize that we're not only talking about people who are using screen readers, but people with learning disabilities who are using text-to-speech, people with visual disabilities, cognitive disabilities. There's a whole realm. And so adhering to standards and understanding the concepts of accessibility and universal design stand you in better stead than trying to address one version of one piece of adaptive technology and eliminating all of those other customers from your website. I've also had to put up a disclaimer that, you know, just because a PDF document passes an accessibility full check does not mean it's an accessible document, because there are agencies and corporations that define accessibility as that. And I can produce a completely inaccessible PDF document, and yet it will produce a clean accessibility full check. And this is something I demonstrate when I do workshops on PDF. When I do workshops on accessible web design and accessible e-learning, I do use a screen reader, but I only use a screen reader so that people will understand how people with adaptive technology are accessing and why headings are important, why the list of links are important, why if you are going to use frames, and thankfully I don't find a lot who do, why you need them to have meaningful names, because I still have a resource kit that I carry with me of archived web pages that have just horrid headings, like heading 1 colon, heading X, you know, links that have here, click here, or when in with e-learning especially, and it says, you know, the text says lecture 1, and then you have your choice of PDF or HTML after it. So you end up with this long list of links that just say PDF, HTML, PDF, HTML. And when I show them that, yeah, when I show them these things in isolation and say, okay, you know, which lecture do you want me to open up? And they say, well, we can't tell what it is. Exactly. You know, so I use the adaptive technology to demonstrate how information can be accessed, but the bulk of what I do is talk about the standards and how you make things more accessible. I use the technology to sort of grab them and get them in and interested, but then just talk about the standards and what makes a more accessible document.
Excellent. So,
Daryl, we have a caller.
Okay, let's bring them in.
Okay, we have Chris. Hello, Chris. Welcome to Main Menu Live. How can we help you tonight?
All righty. Hey, you guys. I was just wanted to call in about this this whole topic. My favorite thing to do in a program is I love hotkeys. They're my favorite thing to use because it jumps you around the program so much easier and gets you to where you need to go really fast. And on websites, I know what you guys are talking about, frames and different links being kind of weirdly labeled, but you get to know it if you go to a website frequently. Now, Amazon.com is a good one for me because I've kind of learned that site, and I can jump around and get to where I need to go, but of course you have to know what to do first. So for someone who's never used it, they're going to be going, well, what am I going to do here? But once you get to know it, and once you learn your own little technique, you know, whether you use the list of links, or if you use like jumping to text with whatever key to use. But I like hotkeys. Those are my favorite thing to use. And I do wish that some websites were more accessible as far as links go, because they're labeled funny.
You know, Chris, you bring up a really interesting point, because when I went over to Google today, I don't know if you noticed, did you visit Google today?
No, actually I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, if you visit Google today, at least everybody at my place of employment who visited Google today went to a new homepage for Google. We were all redirected.
Huh?
Oh.
See, I don't have a homepage set up. I just go to the search and just do it.
Right, but if you go to google.com, at least for us, it went to the iGoogle page. And this is a very good example of making sure you really know your screen reader well, because the page is quite a bit different and has quite a bit more to it now. It's not just, you know, the skinny little Google, you know, the little small Google page we all know and love. It's quite a bit different. Now, if you do click, there's a classic Google page link there, and if you click on that, then it sets a cookie and it doesn't take you there anymore.
Because I just went to it now, and it went to the regular Google page.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting, because...
me too.
We had about 20 people at work who went to Google.com, and it went to the iGoogle page. So, very, very interesting. But this is a good example of where you really need to be aware of what's going on, because things aren't necessarily labeled as efficiently, especially...
And that was my next question, but you just answered it. I was wondering if the labels weren't very on the website, so if it wasn't labeled correctly, but...
Well,
you answered on that one.
Well, the thing is that when you actually... if you sign in to your Google page, in other words, if you have a Google account or Gmail account, then you can do layout of that page. And the way that that's done visually is that you... And Karen probably knows a little bit about this.
I hate to interrupt you, Jeff, but look, I'm looking here. I do see an iGoogle link here.
Yes. Now at work, we were actually forced to the iGoogle page. In other words, if you click on that link, Chris, you'll be taken to what we saw at work this morning, not even going to that link.
Well, I'm not going to do that.
No, it's actually pretty accessible, that.
Is it? Okay.
Until you log in and you want to do any kind of moving things around. But this is a good example of where Ajax is not necessarily as accessible as it could be.
I'll have to try that with other screen readers.
Yeah, we'll be interested in other people's feedback in the coming weeks here, as far as what their experience is. But it looks
I did try System Access to Go, by the way, and it's great.
Oh, good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments, Chris?
That's just about it. I just wanted to throw my two cents in there about the hotkeys. Those are your friends. If you really want to get around a program and you know what the hotkeys are, use them and you'll get around a whole lot easier and you'll get your job done faster.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris.
Okay, man.
We'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much, Chris.
You know, he brings up a really good point, and that being that, you know, a lot of applications are using HTML interfaces. So not only do you have to be good at, I'm trying to get rid of this. Not only do you have to be good at the web, but you also have to be good at these commands inside of regular desktop type applications, which utilize web controls and things like that. And believe me, there's more and more of those coming around.
Absolutely. Wow. So thanks, Chris, for the tip about the hotkeys. That's really good. Even I know, for me, when I get to an unfamiliar website, I try to find some text to read first, usually. I'm talking about an unfamiliar website, you know, so I use the N key, in most screen readers like JAWS and Window Eyes to move to non-linked text. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Another technique that I found interesting is to, especially a website that I'm using, a particular website I use for job-related tasks, is to set a temporary place marker in a certain location. And then with JAWS, you know, press Control K, and then I can hit K to get to that place really quickly and find out what I need to know. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I use the place marker feature quite a bit. You know, one of the things that I think throws people more than most anything else I've seen are the select boxes that when you go into forms mode or turn browse mode off and you hit your down arrow, it causes a change in focus, and they're driven by the kind of scripts that actually execute when you move focus off the first item. And I talk to so many blind people who don't know about alt down arrow. It's just amazing. And alt down arrow has saved me in so many situations. I can't begin to tell you how many combo boxes or select boxes I couldn't have gotten through had it not been for a simple keystroke like alt down arrow. And it's those kinds of clues and cues, you know, that really end up just making the difference as to whether or not you can access a site. Going into forms mode, I have sighted people all the time that use the screen reader, and they want desperately to test their site before we see it. And they just come to us and say, we couldn't even log in. And you can tell them about forms mode until you're blue in the face, but until they actually see and hear it in action, they have no idea what you're talking about. And it's just incredible how complex an environment we have to deal with. And I think, you know, how much more as blind people we really have to learn that the sighted person just takes for granted. You know, they open their browser and they're browsing. And for us, the browser, I don't even think it's half. I think it's maybe one-third of the tool that we have, and the rest is the screen reader, and that's at least two-thirds, if not more, of what we have to cope with. And it's a tall order, and I just encourage any blind person who is intimidated by the web to just get with it and try it and learn it and not be intimidated. It can be done, and it's not impossible, but it does require some tenacity.
Hey, Daryl, I wanted to switch.
Don,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Karen.
I don't think I have ever browsed the internet. I go with a goal in mind, and if I haven't found it in a few minutes, I generally look for Contact Us and ask them. One of the things you were talking about earlier, using the alt down arrow, there are a lot of people in applications, especially if you're using something like Zoom Text, where it has the alt down arrow as one of its sort of tool keys, that don't understand the pass-through or the pass, what do you call it, pass. Some of the applications call it a pass-through key, and some of them call it a pass-by or something key, where
bypass,
you can actually temporarily turn off the adaptive technology control and use the one for the application. And that, for a lot of students, has really helped them use tools like the styles pane in Microsoft Word and access some of the formatting tools and other things that they need in a much more efficient manner. Instead of looking at them through the menus, they can now just use the pass-through key, do the keyboard command they need, and then continue on with their work. So even little tricks like that, not everyone knows that the applications have these kinds of workarounds.
Definitely. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, I was typing on MSN. I kind of know how you feel.
Yeah, hey, isn't this a switch?
It's kind of nuts. I wanted to kind of switch topics, if that's okay. We've already talked a little bit about this from the PDF angle, but I wanted to talk about it also from an angle of office productivity within the workplace in things like Microsoft Word. And I wanted to find out what kind of tips and techniques or strategies, and we'll have Karen start first. Are you suggesting when you're doing training or you're working with a client, especially in Microsoft Word, which I find, and no, I haven't read your book yet, which I find to be or can be a very daunting task, especially if you're not. Especially if you don't live and breathe in Word, for example. What do you think of that, Karen? Karen? Daryl?
I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
I wonder where she went.
Where'd you go, Karen?
Okay, well, while we're doing that, Don, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. Why don't we start with you, and Daryl will locate Karen.
She's here. At least she's online.
Okay.
Go ahead, Don.
Sure. I think your question was, you were talking about Microsoft Word and what kind of techniques or training methods do you recommend? Is that kind of what you were getting at?
To improve productivity inside of applications like Microsoft Word, yes.
Yeah, it's funny. Most of my blind customers, they know exactly what they need to know and no more and no less. And actually, there's nothing wrong with that. Part of the problem is the kinds of documents we get. I saw a document the other day, and one of the things I'm teaching my customers to use is, I know both JAWS and WindowEyes have a summary feature. I think in JAWS it's Insert F1, and in WindowEyes, is it Control Shift S? I'm not sure. But it gives you a summary of the various elements in the document, and that can be so useful. I think a lot of people don't do that, and they should. I had a document the other day that had literally 37 objects in the drawing layer, and none of them could be switched to the text layer, and of course the document was unreadable. But by getting that summary using the keystroke from the screen reader, and again, it's just another example of the screen reader trying to make up for the fact that there's a lot of information that you need in a hurry, and you need it in a summary fashion. So they provide these summary reports that you can get, and I just do that as a matter of course now. When I open any Word document, I automatically go for the summary because I don't want any surprises. I want to know if there's tables. I want to know if there's graphics. I want to know if there's images that may not be described, or columns. And I think that's critical. Know your document. Learn, again, and it's part of learning the screen reader, learn how to use that feature. The other thing I tell people is to practice. You know, a lot of our customers, unfortunately, they don't do something until it's the 11th hour and they're in a state of crisis, and then they want to learn a feature. Well, that's no time to be learning something is when, you know, you've got a project that's due in 15 minutes, or let's say you're already 15 minutes late with it. So, you know, we practice the basics on inconsequential, unimportant stuff, because that's the only way you can really learn. And by doing that kind of training, one of the things that's really complicated is track changes. And we've had a few people who've needed to learn, how do you really use track changes with a screen reader? How do you use the track changes toolbar? How do you turn it on and off? It's not impossible, but again, it requires just a little bit of learning and patience. And once you do it, when you don't need it, you'll be able to do it when you need it.
Do we get Karen back? Daryl?
She is having trouble hearing us, so I'm getting her hooked up with so she can listen on the stream. Not sure what the situation is.
That's very odd.
That's very odd. Don and Karen are both having a little trouble hearing us on the Skype side.
Okay, Don, can you hear me?
I hear you all, but there is such numerous echoes and repetitions that I can maybe get, like I say, 1/8 to 1/10 of what's being said. But I did hear my name, so
that's
I figured
strange.
You were calling me.
Okay. Okay. Daryl, you may need to relay this. Don, what do you think about the use of Excel or even inside of, say, Outlook with the calendar? Do these same principles apply in reference to how you are handling, you know, spreadsheets and other types of activities inside of Microsoft Office?
I use spreadsheets for my timesheets. We've actually created timesheets for other blind customers and very simple sheets which track production, you know, for alternate formats and that kind of stuff. And, you know, at the risk of just repeating myself over and over again, the screen readers have come to the plate with special tricks, so to speak, that really, let's face it, a spreadsheet is very much a sighted process. You're looking at a grid, a very complicated grid which contains cells and rows and columns, and it's wonderful to be able to use a screen reader and to be able to hear the column header or the row header, even though you may be hundreds of cells deep into the spreadsheet.
Oh, right? Absolutely. I use that functionality all the time. And interesting about track changes there.
Yeah, you know, it's the screen readers. I just can't say enough good things about these folks who have really done their best to take what are generally visual concepts for sighted folks and turn them into audible or braille usable information for us. And I use the Outlook calendar, and it works quite well. You know, later versions of JAWS, and I know I've looked at the WindowEyes calendar dialog, and it's just amazing. And again, it's two completely different solutions for the same problem, but they both do an excellent job of turning what would be an impossible task into something that we can manage at an audible level.
Well, you know, this is really interesting. I kind of wonder what the future brings in reference to other types of applications, such as programming type tools, where a lot of programming is now done by dragging and dropping and actually doing design documents that are visual in nature. In other words, you draw what you want, and then, you know, the tools will do the layout for you. They'll actually lay out controls and things like this. And it will be interesting to see as either the community evolves, you know, whether that be through the vendor or through other, you know, programmers within the blindness community, to see where that trend ends up going. Because I think this issue of everything being visual it's not going to stop. You know, so I really think that it's only going to get worse, and the developers of screen readers and the community of developers who are blind, who are writing, say, JAWS scripts, you know, that type of thing, and NVDA scripts and things like that, you know, it's really going to become imperative for them to even become more creative as the paradigm changes in this industry. I mean, especially, you know, in 10 years from now, it's only going to get worse. At least I think so. What do you think, Don?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you talk about that, because to hear a guy like Jamal Mazrui, who, you know, you had on the show a couple weeks ago, and here's a totally blind guy, and he's doing some really good programming, and he's laying out forms, and he's actually developing techniques to take what would be a visual form interface, and not being a programmer, I don't know exactly how he does it, but he's using these languages which traditionally have a sophisticated drag-and-drop facility, and he's using backdoors or other mechanisms to produce these really good, complicated dialog boxes and other form controls that I'm sure look appealing, and they sound appealing, and they work very well. And, you know, I think he's a really good example of somebody who is kind of keeping on the cutting edge and making sure that whatever he programs is very accessible. It's pretty awesome.
This is really why I was hoping Chris Hofstetter would have been here tonight, because he could have really spoken to, you know, this issue of graphical design and graphical layout, and how, you know, this really is going to be more and more of an issue as developer tools. And hey, believe me, if they're in developer tools today, they're going to be in mainstream tools tomorrow. You know, so
absolutely.
Don't kid yourself if you think that, well, this is only for the geeky guy. Well, you know, no. I really envision the day that, you know, when one version, you know, in a few years, Microsoft Office is going to come up with a way where, you know, you don't design things in spreadsheets by, you know, typing them in, or you know, you pull data from a source and you drag it around and you make it look pretty, and you draw the bar graphs, or, you know, or something, you know, that type of a thing. It's only going to get worse, and I'll be very interested to see how this industry handles this and makes it easy for the end user, you know, coming up with a model of something similar to the Freedom Scientific Sound and Scheme Manager, which I know we didn't really talk too much about, but that might be really the jumping off point of, you know, that might be the way of handling some of this. What do you think, Don?
You know, it's funny. I've heard so much about, I know the Speech and Sounds Manager is one of Eric's favorite features. I've never used it, and I don't really know many people who are, and I'm not knocking it by saying that. It's just that the facilities to get what I need out of the applications are already there. But I could really see how in very complex situations you could use different voices or different sounds. I remember using Homepage Reader way back when it first came out. And they were very sophisticated in having one voice for links, one voice for headers, one voice for regular text, another voice for table headers. I mean, you could customize that thing so that you could just tell by the sound of the voice what kind of web element you were looking at. And at the time, it was pretty fancy. And, you know, the keyboard commands have gotten so sophisticated lately that I think we've moved away from the need for that. But I certainly could see in future kinds of applications something like a speech and sounds manager really being effective in giving you more information than you might get just from the audible output of a screen reader.
Well, I was talking to Chris about this over the weekend, and he said that Ted Henter would spend, you know, time and actually counting syllables and making things more efficient. That's why, you know, Freedom Scientific says things like star as opposed to asterisk, you know. So I think it's very interesting that, you know, the amount of thought that really goes into that entire process. And, you know, he really kind of brought it home that, you know, hearing the word link versus hearing a beep is, you know, it's a lot faster to hear a beep. I just don't know if I could get used to arrowing down and hearing beep, 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 beep. I just don't know if I could get used to that. You know what I mean? I just don't know if I could get used to that. But, yeah, this is a really interesting topic in that it's kind of like you're a programmer's text editor, you know? Once you learn what you like, that's what you do. And it's going to be individualistic, you know, individualized for everybody. Daryl, do we have Karen back?
No, she is having one heck of a time. I think you and I think we maybe shouldn't have asked these guys to update.
Well, that's all right. Actually, Don sounds actually really, really good. It's unfortunate he can't hear us too well. I'm not really
I feel
sure.
Kind of bad now.
Yeah, it's kind of bad. Well, you know, Skype tells you on their Skype page that, you know, can encourage everybody to upgrade to 3.2 for best sound quality. Well, you know, you do what you're told and you get shot. So I don't know. But well, we're almost out of time. Don and Karen, we really want to thank you for coming on to the show. Don, do you have any last minute words before we let you go here?
Last minute thoughts? No, except to encourage everyone to work hard, learn your screen readers, don't be afraid of applications. I think the greatest thing screen reader companies can do and are doing are coming up with innovative ways of bridging that gap between the visual and the audio. And I think as blind people, we need to push them and take advantage of those offerings and really use them to the fullest extent we can.
Okay. Well, Don and Karen, if you can hear us, we really do appreciate both of you coming on tonight. And Daryl, you have any last minute thoughts here?
Well, I think this was a great topic and a great way to end this season of Main Menu. We'll be back in about 5 weeks, everyone.
Yeah, five
thanks,
or six weeks.
Thanks, Don, and thanks, Karen, for coming on. And apologies for the technical difficulties there, but so technology goes, I suppose. And do stay tuned to the Main Menu blog at mainmenu.acbradio.org and the mailing list and to the acbradio.org website and upcoming convention coverage as well.
That's right. Next week here on Mainstream, we will not have Main Menu on. We'll be actually covering the ACB National Convention. And then we're going to be doing reruns of other Main Menu programs. If you guys have any shows that you would like to rehear, then do get a hold of us at mainmenu@acbradio.org. We would love to get those slotted for you. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. During the time that we're off, we'll be scouring the net and getting content for you for the next season of Main Menu. So be rest assured that even though that we're not going to be here live, we're going to be busy little beavers working on brand new content for you coming up in August and beyond. So, all right, Daryl, you want to wish everybody good night there, and we'll let you go, and I'll take us out here.
Good night, everyone, and thank you for listening to Main Menu and Main Menu Live here on ACB Radio Mainstream.
All right, thanks, Daryl. We appreciate that. Daryl has been a trooper with us here on ACB Radio Main Menu, and we do appreciate that. We'll see all of you on the next season of Main Menu and Main Menu Live. Have a great summer. Enjoy it. Do lots of swimming. Spend it with your family and all that kind of fun stuff. And we'll talk to you next season here on Main Menu. Good night, everybody.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.